When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Misses the opportunity to follow up a fine victory at AC Milan San Siro with further cup progress in Leicester. Brendan Rodgers' side were good. United went off to his off day all round. As Oliver Solskjaer made 5 changes to his side, but insisted post-match he would do it the same again. United are out of the FA Cup, and the only remaining chance for silverware is the UEFA Europa League, where we will face La Liga side Granada. Welcome back to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast with Harry Robinson and Jack Tate. We're talking that disappointing defeat to Leicester in detail. No matches to preview this week due to the upcoming international break. And after talking about Leicester, I'll be providing you with the regular and extensive youth loan and women's roundup. Defeats for the under-23s and women's team, but a good win for the under-18s. And James Garner captains Nottingham Forest. Jack, I'm going to come into this episode happy and smiling on the back of a week where United have seen off a top four contender in West Ham and secured their position in second in the Premier League, beaten AC Milan at San Siro, messed it up at the end against Leicester. So I'm just putting that out there. I'm coming in with a smile and trying to be positive. The truth is that I think the basic truth is the scrutiny at United and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is always going to be massive. But when no trophy has been won, it's even bigger. And that makes these results difficult. And there haven't been that many of these results this season, but that makes them difficult and brings into the question subs, starting 11, tactics, etc., recruitment, coaching staff, whatever. And the truth is probably, I mean, the question I'm going to ask you is how much of a big message is there really here? There were weaknesses against Leicester that we've seen all season, and that's a concern. We'll move on to that. We'll look at how the mistakes we made. But is there any other truth except this was a tired United side who have had injuries recently, still need better squad depth and upgrades in a couple of specific positions, and came up against a good Leicester team and were just outdone?
I think, honestly, for me, it's the timing of the defeat, the timing of the bad performance that it made this feel a lot worse than it actually was. I agree with you. I don't think we actually learn anything bad that's new about United off the back of the performance yesterday. We know that we are a team with players all across the pitch, to be honest, who are prone to making errors, as Fred did for the first goal. We know that despite the fact that our defensive record recently has been very good, actually, defensively, we are quite shaky and we don't always look solid at the back, especially with runners from midfield, which is exactly what we saw for the second goal. And we also know that we're not particularly great at defending set pieces, which is exactly what we saw for the third goal. So I don't think we learned anything particularly new that is bad. As you said, we are a team dealing with a lot of injuries, a lot of players coming back from injuries, and therefore a lot of our frontline players who have had to play more than we would have liked recently because of those injuries clearly looked very tired and fatigued against Leicester. But I think the big thing for me is simply the timing of it, because this, and we spoke about this in our Patreon episode after the Milan game, that this could have been a huge week in this season for Manchester United, pretty much securing our place as second in the league after beating West Ham and almost at this point, I think, cementing top four almost without a doubt. beating Milan away at the San Siro, a good victory, take us through to the quarterfinals of the Europa League, and then potentially getting through to the semi-final of the FA Cup. I mean, that would have been a huge, huge week in this season. And the timing of this was such a body blow because it felt like we were really, really moving forward this week after some not great performances recently.
Yeah.
And it was really deflating.
Yeah, I think also you raised the Milan episode we did, and one of the big things we spoke about in there, as well as the brilliance of Pogba and a good tactical showing from Solskjaer. But the other big thing we spoke about was that United had come out and won a pressure game, a game where a lot was on the line. To go and then do that again against Leicester would have only reinforced the point. Instead, it kind of brings back, it makes Milan look like an anomaly where United have come up for a pressure game and won it. I've got a lot of conflict over this game. If we'd recorded straight after, I think we would have had that general depression and fury at the mistakes made. And you're right, the three goals, it was a compilation of errors, and a compilation of errors that we have seen all season. Having had a day to kind of let things sink in, there are lots of questions to be answered. And it is an enormous shame that United have beaten Liverpool and West Ham to get this far in the FA Cup and for nothing. It's a great shame.
There was a scenario, this is an aside that is not very relevant, but there was a scenario where if we'd have drawn Chelsea or City in the semi-final, we could have potentially had to play every other single side in the top six to win the FA Cup this year. We would have played Liverpool, then West Ham, then Leicester, and then either Chelsea or City, and then maybe the other one out of Chelsea or City in the final as well.
Well, I mean, you consider this year, and it's an important point. Brighton away, Everton away, City at home, Liverpool at home, West Ham at home, Leicester away, Real Sociedad and AC Milan. United have had an enormously tough time in the Cups this year. We've had two soft draws, Luton and Watford. And look, we'd be expected to beat Real Sociedad. We'd be expected to beat Brighton, Leicester, West Ham, Everton, whatever. But the point is that we've had to start strong teams in those games. And that sometimes you get seasons like that. It's not an excuse, but it's an explanation. We haven't had those opportunities, except for Luton and Watford, to rest our key players. There have been times when Fernandes has been benched. There's been times when Rashford has been benched, when Shaw has been benched. But there's rarely been a time when we haven't seen any of Shaw, Bruno Fernandes and Marcus Rashford. And that's what we saw against Leicester.
And crucially, there's rarely been a time when those players have been benched. There's rarely been a time when they haven't been needed to come on as well. The one that sticks out in my mind is playing West Ham away in the Premier League back in, November maybe? And Fernandes was benched and had to come on at half-time because we were 2-0 down or 1-0 down at half-time.
Yeah, absolutely. And even, I mean, you go back to last season and I remember the game against Norwich, we were talking about how we'd had to play Bruno Fernandes for 120 minutes in that game when he clearly needed a rest. But the point is that not only have we not been able to rest players when we would have liked to, partly because of injuries, partly because of tough draws, but also it means that the players coming in and returning from injury, actually, particularly Donny van de Beek, I think everyone will be thinking of, but also Alex Telles and others, haven't been able to get that rhythm to their game, which means they can come in and play and perform. We'll talk about van de Beek perhaps later, perhaps another time. It's a sorry situation, although his dummy for the Mason Greenwood goal was fantastic, and I'm still confident there's a United player in there. I think, have we kind of got the caveat? There's probably one more caveat to say, or a couple. This was United's fifth game in 2 weeks since March the 7th. So from March the 7th to March the 21st, United played five times. And this was Leicester's second. And I mean, it's the combination of all these factors, and it's infuriating. And there'll be some people who aren't that bothered about the FA Cup, but I'm not one of those people. And with 20,000 fans being allowed to go to Wembley for the final, with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer needing a trophy to win as United manager, but also the players who we've grown. I think this is one of the most likable squads at United for a while. We've grown to like these players. We want to see them win something. It's sad and it's disappointing, but it's all these factors together. And we have to remember this season, the recent form, even though it's kind of felt as if it's been stuttering at times, hasn't been that bad. We've kept clean sheets against City, West Ham twice, Milan, Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal, Real Sociedad twice. This was our first domestic away loss in 14 months, our first defeat in 15, our only second defeat in 28. I mean, we played badly, we're against a good team, and we were tired. You can add anything more, then we'll go on to the mistakes, which we also do have to criticise.
No, I think that's pretty much it. I mean, there are a lot. I think the one thing I would say is that we maybe aren't the only team, you know, dealing with these circumstances. You know, you could, of course, say everyone's dealing with a congested fixture list, which is true. This is a truncated season that is having to be squeezed into a smaller length of time. And then the injuries is the big one for me, in that, you know, most teams, including United, can deal with a lot of fixtures. And to be fair, I think we often talk about tiredness and fatigue, maybe slightly too much, because I think we underestimate just how physically great these players are. But I think it's the injuries that's the big one for me, because you can't underestimate the value of being taken off after 50 or 60 minutes in a game when we know we're comfortable. And that's the luxury we haven't had recently because of all the injuries that we've had. We haven't had the likes of Van de Beek or Martial or Cavani or Rashford or Pogba to rotate in and out. So we've effectively been stuck with pretty much the same starting lineup for the first time this year, really. We've not had any opportunity to rotate. And so I think that to me is the big one. I think, you know, the caveats are absolutely there, and we definitely are suffering with them a little bit more than most, I think, because of the injuries. But I think it's also fair to say that we should probably be doing a better job of dealing with that. You know, I think both of those things are true at this point.
Definitely. It's not to say that we couldn't be doing better. It's just, I think it's almost...
Yeah, that context is definitely needed.
Yeah, I feel like this last few minutes has always almost been me kind of trying to remind myself of the situation, because football's silly and we get pissed off with it. And I feel like this season, especially when you kind of have to mull over the defeats without the help of mates being around you or transport home or whatever, it is a little different. Right, let's go. I've got three main mistakes I want to raise. The first one is about team selection. The second is about being loose in possession. And the third is about tracking runs and a coherent defensive structure being missing. And I think those three mistakes kind of have gone throughout the season, really. If we start with team selection, what did you think of... I mean, when the lineup came out, what did you think? Because I was fine with the players being rested. I was fine with Shaw and Fernandes being rested. Now you look back at it, you think we're going into an international break. It's another conflicted one. I think the problem is you look at that game and you think Shaw and Fernandes were rested. We know they haven't been in the past when there's been an opportunity to. And so the contrast between those past experiences and this one, where we're playing a really good Leicester team who are fresh and we needed our best players, makes it a bit more difficult. I think the only real problem, though, for me, looking at that starting 11 before the game, was the midfield of Fred and Matic.
I was shocked, I've got to say. I was shocked at how much rotation there was. I think for a couple of reasons. Firstly, obviously, we have the international break coming up. And I know that that's difficult because it's never easy to understand exactly how much rest the players will be getting during that international break. You know, we've just heard reports that Rashford is linking up with the England squad now and potentially in line to play despite having been injured for our last couple of games. So then, you know, you see headlines like that, and it's difficult to think the international break presents a real potential for players to be rested. I think, though, that I was shocked at the level of rotation, I guess mainly Shaw and Fernandes, simply because I think after the international break, we have Brighton and then Granada. And now I know that Granada is an extremely important game, but over two legs, if something goes wrong in the leg when you rest people, you have a chance to claw it back. And I was shocked that the Granada game wasn't penciled in as the one where you would maybe rest and rotate more players, especially given how, and I think not only the fans, but also Solskjaer and the players, how desperate we all are to win a trophy and to win the FA Cup. So I was a little bit shocked. I wouldn't say I was upset about it. I completely understand it. And I don't think the changes that were made generally were particularly bad. The Fred and Matic one, I agree with you, but that puzzled me. I think mainly just because that partnership has never really been tested.
It's never worked either.
No. And, you know, we've spoken so much about how we have four midfielders who are all, I would say, I mean, Pogba is definitely a level above, but Matic, Fred, McTominay, all pretty similar levels. But within those four midfielders, there are only two combinations that work, and that's McTominay and Fred, or Pogba and Matic.
Yeah.
And to try and go with an unproven combination in Fred and Matic didn't seem like it had much thought process behind it.
I think the Fred and Matic is where I'll focus most of my energies. Just before I do, I'm looking at an article I wrote straight after the game for United and Folk. I was looking at the biggest mistakes we made, and I wrote about the team selection, and my first line was saying no manager should feel so desperate as to make four subs at once, but Solskjaer did. Now, I'm thinking about that now, and to be fair, some context has to be added because Pogba was kind of penciled in to play half a match, let alone 65 minutes, so he was always going to come off. So there is, again, there's a bit of context there, but I thought it was an indictment of the mistakes made in the starting 11. Not so much about the rotation necessarily, but about the obvious glaring areas of weakness in that team. The key is that midfield of Fred and Matic in the stark contrast with the energetic and well-balanced Leicester pairing of Ndidi and Tielemans. And the flailing, lunging, possession-conceding Matic and Fred was embarrassing and infuriating. And both of Leicester's midfielders, I'd be happy to see United sign. That maybe that's an aside. But that combination of Fred and Matic was a nightmare. There's also a conflict here because it clearly was just an off day for both of them. Now for Fred, his problem always has been he is always a standout player for Manchester United. It's just a shame that he swings from being standout for one of the best players on the pitch, where his bustling and harrying earns him credit, and rightly so, and he swings to those 4 out of 10 performances, as we saw against Leicester, where he just gives away fouls, loose passes, terrible football going forward, terrible tracking of runs, and that swing is just unacceptable for a midfielder you're meant to rely on. Matic, it kind of just seemed like an off day. I mean, the guy completed 74% of his passes in 65 minutes, and his normal rate for the season is 91. It was clearly just a terrible day for him.
I was going to say, it's not as if Matic is playing like Bruno Fernandes type passes where you can think that's okay, that he's mainly passing sideways and backwards.
Yeah. So, I mean, Matic, I feel like it was just an off day, and I'm hesitant to kind of go in on him here because everyone knows that Matic shouldn't be kind of a starting midfielder for United anymore. I'm sure Ole Gunnar Solskjaer knows that. And to be honest, Matic probably knows that as well. But there just isn't anyone else at the moment. But I guess that imbalance of midfield was a problem, and the looseness in possession, just gifting chances to Leicester. I mean, even before Fred gave that one to Kelechi Iheanacho, he'd already given the ball away twice, and Leicester had opportunities. But I think Matic was actually much worse offender over the whole of the game. Hence, he was hooked after 65 minutes.
I mean, just the pair of them, they firstly don't complement each other, right? Which is exactly what we've been saying for a while, that their styles just don't mesh well at all. Fred is very high energy. It's very, I think hustle and bustle is probably the best way to describe the way that Fred plays. You know, he's always in and around the action. Probably not going to be particularly polished, but he can be effective when he's at his best. Matic is the complete opposite of that. And when you have two players with such contrasting styles, unless their roles are completely differentiated, which they clearly are not when we play, they're both in there to do pretty much the same job. It just doesn't work. You can't have two players in midfield that are so, so different. And I think to give some credit to Leicester, I think part of the reason why we struggled in midfield and in defence actually was we couldn't deal with Leicester's sort of split striker system, with Vardy and Kelechi Iheanacho both pulling out, not into really wide areas where Telles and Wan-Bissaka would be marking them, but sort of into the channels. And the second goal for Leicester is exactly this scenario. Iheanacho had pulled out into the sort of the left back, inside left back channel for United. Maguire had followed him. And then that meant that Matic and Fred were left to deal with Tielemans. Fred couldn't get over. Matic let Tielemans get past him in the 1-2. And then because Maguire's been dragged out of defence by Kelechi, there's a ton of space for Tielemans to run into. Lindelof is trying to track Vardy's run. You know, there's just
this is a
calamity of errors, really.
I was just going to say, this is what I mean about a lack of coherent defensive structure. And I think tracking runs just sums up all United's problems because...
Oh, yeah.
For that move doesn't begin when... I mean, Matic steps out of defence, right, to try and close down Tielemans and fails, unsurprisingly, because Matic generally, it's not a good idea to lunge in if you're meant to be the holding midfielder, suffocating the space rather than trying to press into a midfield. A stupid idea. But the problem was actually that further up the pitch, Anthony Martial had let go of his marker too early, which means Matic comes out of defence. So Martial's not made that tracking run. Matic steps out. Suddenly he's having to recover. Fred now has to come over. And then all of the things that you were talking about as well, it starts at the top of the pitch.
Yeah.
And the truth is that United's, I mean, it comes down to coaching and players, of course, but United's front line isn't good enough as that first line of defence. This tracking runs issue stretches all over, though, because it goes down to the third goal. McTominay misses a header, Kelechi scores.
I mean, that is really just... I was wondering when we're going to get onto this, but I mean, how on earth can a player have that much space inside the six-yard box?
Yeah. Well, it was interesting. I've seen Carl Anker from The Athletic spoken about this before. I think he did a piece back in January or February about United's weaknesses from set pieces, because we've seen it all season. And the basic truth, and I actually think this doesn't just apply to set pieces, this applies to all of United's defence throughout the game. But as soon as crosses aren't cleared at the near post, United are in serious trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes you see Lindelof will head away a near post thing. Very occasionally you'll see Wan-Bissaka do it, but very occasionally it's definitely not one of... This is actually why I think he's not in the England squad, is because of that problem at the back post or the near post defending crosses, despite his brilliance one-on-one. Maguire, we spoke about this last week after West Ham, was constantly blocking and intercepting those low and high crosses that West Ham were sending in from the right wing, and did it fantastically. The problem is when that doesn't happen. And it can happen for all sorts of reasons, personal errors, individual errors, but also just another team being very good at it or whatever, or someone's not protecting them. And to be fair, that goes, Alex Telles was terrible at protecting Harry Maguire on Sunday. And so I think Maguire committed 4 fouls just in that left side of the pitch. But yeah, as soon as those balls get over the near post, United don't really know what to do. And it's an interesting one, because I think we've probably got worse. This is the one area you can look at and definitively say United have not improved at all since Solskjaer came in. The one caveat I'd say is this season it will show which coaches and managers are most effective in getting their message across in the shortest space of time, because there's no time to train. There is time to do video analysis and ice baths and recovery. In terms of training, the time is just not there. And I think that's why perhaps we can blame the coaching staff as well, definitely. But I think that's kind of the explanation for why set pieces just continue to be terrible at United this season, attack and defence.
Yeah, I mean, the coaching situation is difficult, because there is just so few opportunities to actually do much on the training ground. I mean, I would love to know actually how many days United have actually spent at Carrington this year, because it must be pretty minimal when you consider we're basically playing every 3 days. When we're playing away, we obviously often sometimes travel down the night before, especially in the Europa League. We might do that. You know, it's very, very limited time on the training pitch that we're having this season. So, you know, yes, that is a fair point. But I think the other thing that I would point out is this isn't just an issue for this season. You know, it maybe arguably has got worse, but just as we were talking there about crosses that aren't cleared by the first man, I have instant memories back to the FA Cup semi-final last year against Chelsea, when we conceded a goal to Giroud from that, because Lindelof let Giroud get across the front of him.
Yeah.
Because the cross wasn't blocked by the first man. You know, this isn't a new problem. And sure, it may have got worse, but this has been a problem for pretty much holds Solskjaer's entire time in charge. And at some point that has to improve. I mean, this is something we talked about when we played Man City as well, that actually when you look at our games against Man City, despite how potent their attack is, it's never been their attacking players that have destroyed us, actually. It's been their midfielders. Sterling's never scored against us. Jesus, I think, as he may have, maybe he scored once against us, he's not scored many at all. Mahrez hasn't ever done much against United. Actually, the main threat for United against City has always come from Gundogan, Bernardo Silva, and set pieces. That's where we concede almost all of the goals that we've conceded to Pep's City. And that is a microcosm of what we're like as a team defensively in general. I think what's really frustrated me this week is that it's felt over the last few weeks that we are starting to get some semblance of a system being put in place here. We've started pressing higher up the pitch, and we've started pressing higher up the pitch with a lot more coherence, cohesiveness than we have done in other games, especially against Sociedad and then Milan. Some of our pressing was very, very good. We also started playing out from the back a lot more intentionally. We have this new goal kick routine where we give it to Maguire and Lindelof. I don't mind that. I know it ended up with Leicester getting a goal from Fred's mistake, but honestly, I don't mind that at all. It at least shows that we're committed to a system. Mistakes will happen, and you just have to hope that a player doesn't make a mistake like Fred does. That's a one in a million mistake. What's so frustrating to me is that I don't expect us, and I don't think any fan expects us to be at our best every single week, right? The best teams in the world are not at their best every single week. Man City, even in their crazy winning run, weren't at their best every single game. The difference, though, between where we are at the moment and becoming a top team is that the top teams, like Manchester City this season, their bad games, their level drops to maybe 7 out of 10. In our bad games, our level is capable, maybe not for the entire game, but for 15, 20-minute stretches, like right after halftime against Leicester, our level drops to pretty much 2, 3 out of 10. I mean, in the first 15 minutes against halftime against Leicester, after halftime, sorry, against Leicester, I haven't looked back and actually verified this, but I'm actually not sure we completed a pass in Leicester's half.
I might check that after we record this. But from the eye test, it seems like it could be true. We're going to move on in a second. There's a few things we could talk about. I feel like the easy fix to United's set piece weakness is not to sort the set pieces out, which is a little more difficult without the time on the training ground. I think what's interesting, I'm just going to raise this quickly. What's the best period under Solskjaer really been? We've obviously had the December bit and early January where we took ourselves to the top of the table, but post lockdown one, given we are now in number three, Project Restart, Manchester United were a force to be reckoned with. It ended in disappointment against Chelsea and against Sevilla, but in the league, we had a balanced starting 11 and a fantastic team scoring goals from all over the pitch. That was the time that was the longest that Solskjaer has ever had United on the training ground. And so that gives me some faith that these things may be fixed to a certain extent next season. But in terms of a short fix, probably not fixing your set piece defending, which is more difficult, but stop giving away so many fouls. It's happened so many times, and to be honest, it comes down to player profile. It's Matic, Fred, Wan-Bissaka doesn't tend to do it, but occasionally does because he goes to ground so much. He wins probably 90% of those duels when he goes to ground, but he makes so many of them that he does give away some. But particularly the midfielders, Fred, McTominay, particularly Matic as well. Stop giving away so many fouls. I thought what you're saying about tracking runs is interesting because to me it feels like, and you spoke about the pressing in the big games as well, to me it feels like United excel in that area against good teams. Against City when we beat them 2-0, I think one of the key reasons we won that game was our ability to prevent Gundogan and De Bruyne from running into space and pulling the defence apart, which is what they've done against every team they've come up against, every other team. Especially, I mean, Gundogan is, I think he scored 14 in 23 games. It's ridiculous for, well, a so-called midfielder, but a midfielder nevertheless. What's strange is then that it just collapses in games against less good teams. We'll move on in a second, but I'll give you a final word.
I think the key difference, I agree, we did do really, really well against City this time, stopping that. I think the difference, though, is that we're fine doing it when we're sitting deep and we're just trying to hit on the counter-attack. It's a whole different ballgame when you're trying to do it and have more of an impact on the game in an attacking sense. You know, against Leicester, we were pushing higher up the pitch. We were trying to put the pressure on them a little bit more. But then it means there's more reliance on the midfielders to actually track those runs. When you're sitting on the edge of your own box for half the game, and I don't think that was a bad tactic against Man City at all, of course it's easy to track runs because the whole game is being played in a 20-yard compacted square. And if someone makes a run, there's five United players around them, and it's a good bet one of them at least will track the run. The difference against Leicester was that when the game is a little bit more stretched, a little bit more open, there's one person, maybe two, in the case of the second goal, two in Matic and Fred, who are responsible for tracking that run, and they both weren't able to do it.
We're going to go to the youth load and women's roundup. I'll say the final word before we do. It was good to see Mason Greenwood score again. We said for the last few episodes, we've been waiting for that goal to come. And even though it came in defeat, good that he's got back on the score sheet. But we'll go to youth load and women's roundup and then we'll wrap things up. But we'll be doing our bonus Q&A that's normally for patrons. But as we're going into the international break, it'll be for everyone. We'll talk about Van der Beek, Fred, the midfield again, and plenty other things. A disappointing defeat for United under-23s on Friday afternoon. Well beaten 3-0 by Tottenham in a poor performance, really. It was a scrappy, dirty game, inflamed by terrible officiating, really, as so often we see at this level. Hannibal Medjbri and Shola Shoretiri returned to the starting 11, but United created little throughout. Spurs went ahead from the penalty spot after a foul from midfielder Mark Helm. He was filling in at right back and did okay before that foul. United did have chances to equalise, but Marcus Lavenier doubled Tottenham's lead with a deflected shot, and moments later, as United's frustration peaked, a mass brawl happened near the halfway line. Ethan Galbraith, United captain, he'd been fouled. He reacted angrily. Hannibal, realising what was going on, left the ball behind, sprinted over from 20 yards away, dived into action, had his hair grabbed in two directions, lifted his hands to an opponent's neck. And all this while plenty else was going on. The ref and his officials made little attempt to break things up. And that meant that when it came out to dishing out cards, he clearly had little idea what had happened. Hannibal received only a yellow, which was a surprise. Ethan Galbraith was sent off, also a surprise, and three Spurs players got only bookings. It was chaotic. Tottenham ended up grabbing a third later on, but only after George Marsh was sent off for them, finally, after a number of late challenges and petulant fouls, including being involved in that second half brawl. It was a straight red after his arm collided with Hannibal Medjbri's neck, and United manager Neil Wood will want to move on from that quickly. Bad performance, bad mentality from United, and lessons to be learned. As for the under-18s, much better. Charlie McNeil and Amari Forson combined to put United ahead early on. A wonderful reverse pass from McNeil into Forson, who finished well. United played really well against Everton, although they were fortunate at times to keep their clean sheet. Everton with Garcia hit the post in the third minute. They had an open goal to shoot out after Johan Guardano came out of his goal and they missed that through Whittaker. But United's second goal came from a Wilfish header from a corner, and that result keeps United top of the under-18 Premier League with City close on their tails. In loan news, James Garner played 90 minutes for Nottingham Forest, a 1-1 draw against Brentford for them, a quality result for Forest. They were 18th going against 4th place Brentford, Championship promotion favourites, I think people may say. James Garner played really well and was given man of the match and even handed the captain's armband at the end of the game. In League One, Ethan Laird has started 16 consecutive League One fixtures for MK Dons now. It's fantastic news. He's up to over 1,300 minutes this season, having joined them in January. This week, he played 74 minutes for them in a 2-1 away win against Burton Albion. He got the assist for one of MK Dons' goals, also gave away a penalty, and then came off as they were leading 2-1. But just, I have to stress, that consistency from Ethan Laird is fantastic to see. This is a player with a very difficult injury past, and his development has been stunted by those injuries. And to be getting consistent football at this level is great news. Tedin Mengi is also getting consistent football now as well and earning regular praise from Derby manager Wayne Rooney. He played 90 minutes in a 1-0 away defeat against Stoke. Final thing to mention, Facundo Pellistri, his third start in a row for Deportivo Alaves, getting good game time, and this was a show of faith from the Alaves manager, who started Pellistri in a big game against La Liga leaders Atletico Madrid. It was great experience and had a fantastic game as well. He was described as Alaves's only bright spark in the game, with his dribbling, his timing of the pass and quick feet. earning plenty of praise. Final loan story, nice story this one. Jacob Carney, a goalkeeper, young United goalkeeper, is on loan at Northern Irish team Portadown FC. This week he played against former United goalkeeper Roy Carroll, aged 46. In United's women had a disappointing 2-0 defeat on Friday night against Arsenal. United played well, but only after the second minute, in which Arsenal had already taken an early lead. For the rest of the half, Casey Stoney's side dominated possession and created a good couple of chances, the best one for Lauren James in the centre of the penalty area. After the break, immediate history repeated itself. Arsenal scored after only 2 minutes again, doubling their lead and leaving United stunned. We couldn't find one back, and in the end, Arsenal were clinical, taking advantage of United defensive errors, while Casey Stoney's team failed to do the same. The result is a bad one for United, really. 3 points for Arsenal gives them the opportunity to climb above United in the Women's Super League. Arsenal have a game in hand. United are third, which is the final Champions League qualification spot, and now have plenty of work to do. Last season, Stoney's team finished fourth. That was great for the first season in the WSL, but this season is all about breaking into that top three, which have dominated the division for so long, and work to do now, but still in a decent position. And this week, United host West Ham at Old Trafford, the first ever Manchester United women's game at Old Trafford to be played this weekend, which is fantastic news and will be an incredible experience for the players who thoroughly deserve the opportunity. Okay, Jack, we've got these patron questions from Josh, Dave and Marek. We'll start with Josh's, which is an interesting topic. Donny van der Beek. Josh says he's clearly a brilliant player, but maybe his style just doesn't suit us. How long do you give him to settle in? Josh says he thinks he'd be better in a deeper two. I'm not sure I agree, but I'll let you answer this first on van der Beek.
My thoughts on van der Beek are he's clearly a player at the moment whose confidence is just on the floor. And it's very difficult for any player, I think, to come in, especially when you've just joined a club. It's very, very difficult for a player to come in, sit on the bench for 90% of the games, and then be expected to have any sort of impact when you're given a game here, a game there, 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there. I still believe that van der Beek is a very good football player, and I still believe that if he was given the chance, he would be a very impactful player at Man United. The problem is, I think his confidence is so low at this point that not only is he, when he gets the ball, not able to produce what he needs to, on the channel I was watching in the US, there was a lot of talk when Fernandes came on that Fernandes commands the ball and he wants to run the game, and that's the big difference between him and van der Beek. And as much as I think normally that's a bit of a lazy trope, I actually think in this case there's some truth to it, because I just simply think that van der Beek he's not going looking for the ball like a number 10 should at the moment. And I think that's the biggest difference between him now and when he was playing at the start of the season. I think his confidence is just so low that he's not actively putting himself in position to receive the ball in good areas, and he's not demanding the ball from his teammates. He is just sort of drifting through games. I don't think he could really function in a midfield two. His mobility is also questionable to play in that area. Yeah. And I don't think we'd be best served to play him there. I think still, and I've said this so many times, I want him and Fernandes on the pitch together. And maybe to do it, you play one of them as a number 10 and you put the other one sort of nominally on the team sheet as maybe our right-sided winger.
Yeah.
And we've seen when Mata has played there before, there's no obligation to stay out wide. But I want to see them together because their styles complement each other. They're different. And at that part of the pitch, even though we said Matic and Fred being so different is a bad thing in attack, two players having very different styles is a good thing and they can complement each other. It's just not working out for him at the moment, though. His confidence is just so shot to pieces.
Yeah. I think the best hope for van der Beek is United getting a great defence midfielder, which is also the best hope for me and my personal enjoyment of football and life. But for van der Beek especially, that would give him the opportunity to potentially play in a two-man midfield with two eights, as we've mentioned this loads of times, but with two eights ahead of a defensive midfielder. You'd have the normal back four, this great defensive midfielder. Then we've been asked, can we suggest a name? I can't, because I'm not an excellent football scout being employed to do that job. But that person there, two eights in front with van der Beek, and in certain games you'd play van der Beek and Fernandes, in other games you play Pogba, McTominay, and other whatever, but that could be your set formation, and you can always change it from there. And I think van der Beek would be good in that role as the further forward the further forward of two number eights. I'm not sure what he'd do from the wing, but it's a sad situation that almost feels like he just needs next season to start, really. It almost feels too late in the campaign now for him to be able to build his confidence up. All the games United have left are too important to be allowing Van der Beek a full game if United aren't winning. And that's been the problem, is the chances, the games he has got opportunities in, he's had to come off early because United need to win them. And the player on the bench, the play he's in for is Bruno Fernandes. And we need to see Fernandes. But it, theoretically, a trio of Pogba, Fernandes and Van der Beek, I'm not saying as a three-man midfield, I don't think it would work, but that trio being on the pitch in whatever positions, probably Pogba wide and Fernandes and Van der Beek kind of central, should work really well, because Pogba and Van der Beek, an informed and confident Van der Beek would be able to quickly give and go and move with the pass to get the ball, give the ball to Pogba and get it back quickly. And then Fernandes gives that individual quality, the high risk, high reward passes later on.
I mean, I know that this is quite an attacking lineup, but to me, there's no reason why against certain teams, especially those who are going to sit very deep against us, you can't have a midfield two of Matic and Pogba, who we know work quite well together when they're at their best. And then a three in front of them of Fernandes at number 10, Van der Beek nominally on the team sheet on the right, Rashford on the left, and then Cavani or Martial up front. I mean, to me, that feels like a lineup that could work. You could also go Pogba sort of wide left instead of Rashford. Maybe put Rashford up front, or if he's not in the team that day, Fernandes at number 10, Van der Beek on the right, and then Fred and McTominay, for instance, behind it. There are options. I think as much as you can blame Van der Beek, I guess, for not forcing himself into this team and sort of banging the door down in training and all that stuff, I also think that there is some blame to be put on the coaching staff here, that there are creative ways that you can get Van der Beek on the pitch in more situations than he has been. And pretty much the only situation when he's been put on the pitch this season is when Fernandes has either been rested or when he gets taken off. I think the Newcastle game, where we won 4-1 and scored three goals with Van der Beek on the pitch in the last 10 minutes, is one of, I don't want to say it's the only time, I'm sure there's been a couple of others, but it's one of the only times I can remember Van der Beek and Fernandes and Rashford and, was Martial playing that day? I don't know, but definitely Van der Beek, Fernandes, Rashford on the pitch at the same time.
Yeah.
And it went, and it worked. It was great. We scored three goals in 10 minutes. Van der Beek had a hand in at least one of those goals. Like, I understand that Van der Beek probably isn't the best player that we have available at the moment, but at some point you have to be a little bit creative, I think, to get him in the team.
Yeah. I thought Thomas Tuchel, in the last week or so, he was speaking ahead of Chelsea's Champions League game, I think, was against Atletico, was talking about how he wished he'd brought in Olivier Giroud off the bench more than he has done, because he was then starting Giroud against Atletico in the second leg, and wished he was more informed, more confident, more up to speed with the rhythm of the game. And I thought it was interesting, and perhaps there's more managers like that. Tuchel admitted it, kind of a surprising one to admit. Normally you don't get that from managers, but perhaps there are a lot of managers who have, and I'm not just talking about Solskjaer, but who have gone through this season kind of game to game, just trying to win every game because it's so endless and because it's so incessant, and are now looking back and thinking, I wish I brought in a couple of players, a couple of fringe players or a couple of rotation players, a little more than I have done when we've been winning. It's interesting. We've got a couple more questions to ask. Marek says,
before you move on to the next question, I've verified my comment earlier about the no passes in Leicester's half at the start of the second half.
Right.
So it wasn't quite no passes, but it wasn't far off. So between half-time and Tielemans' goal going in, which was 51 minutes, we made two passes in Leicester's half, which was a five-yard 1-2 between Pogba and Matic.
Right.
And it was about a yard inside Leicester's half. And it took us until 55 minutes until we had more than two passes in a row inside Leicester's half.
Yeah, great start to the second.
I mean, that's what my point was, that we can't afford to have moments like that in games. Every team is going to have a 10 or 15 minute spell where maybe they're not at their best, but you can't afford to drop to that lower level when you're playing against good teams, because they will punish you, and it's exactly what happened.
Dave asks about rotation. I feel like we've kind of covered that one earlier. But his other question is about what do you do with Fred McTominay and Matic, all at fault for one of the goals yesterday. I think we can agree on that. But over the course of the season, they've all been very inconsistent. Last year, they were all in form at one point and it looked like we had good strength and depth. Now it looks like they need replacing badly. I don't think I'd agree. I think there has been inconsistencies. I spoke about Fred in particular going from an 8 to a 4 out of 10 from week to week, but he's had a couple of really good two-month long spells this season and impressed. I think some of his weaknesses have been hidden at times, which is a luxury that other players in the team don't get. I think McTominay has had some really good runs. He's had a couple of off games as well. I can't remember who it was against. I remember one particular game where we came on air afterwards and spoke about how bad McTominay had been, and he had been. He'd been really bad. But for much of the rest of the season, he's been fantastic. That one missed header against Leicester isn't really going to change my view of his season. It's been pretty good. There's been very gradual improvement from him in pretty much every area of his game. Not quite enough yet, but kind of some. I'm not sure. I basically think it was an off day, and I'm not gonna. I don't think that game changes my opinion of anyone.
I think the key word that Dave used in that question is that we thought we had good depth last season, and to me, these players do provide good depth, and that should be the extent of their role. Especially Matic and Fred. I think McTominay to me is clearly the best of the three, and has been the best consistently throughout this season. I think he is the least. Both Matic and Fred have areas of their game that are extremely limited. Fred in terms of his progressive passing, Matic in terms of his ability to be mobile in defence. McTominay has the least limitations on his game, in my opinion, even if it's not always perfect. And so he, to me, is clearly the best of those three. But I think the thing is that Fred and Matic should be players that their main thing is providing depth. You know, they are rotation players. They come in when we need them. They can come in and they'll play pretty well, but they aren't in our starting lineup every single week. The problem is that we don't have, and as we've said repeatedly for the last month or so, we don't have that world-class deep midfielder who can come in and be that first-choice rock of a central midfielder to then allow Fred, McTominay, Matic to rotate around him. And to, you know, that to me is the bigger problem here, rather than Fred, Matic and McTominay on their own. I don't think we've ever been under any illusions that they were brilliant options in midfield. You know, I think we've all agreed that they have their uses in the right partnerships and on the right day, they can play very well, but they all have limitations. Yeah. The problem is that we don't have a very good all-round central midfielder that can be our sort of rock playing every single week. And then those others can come in and fill holes when we need them to.
I think going forward for next season, McTominay and Fred stick about purely because of logistics. I think Fred as a backup option is a okay player. I mean, Fred would be a good player in a defensive team. It's just not at United. Fred at Brighton. I mean, I think a great swap move would be Fred with Bissouma. We've not seen enough of Bissouma to know whether he'd be able to cut it at Manchester United. That step up is a really difficult one, but he's a good player and seems like he'd be a good fit. And Fred would go into Brighton and look absolutely brilliant because his role would basically be to do what he does well at United, which is hustle and bustle around the pitch and make tackles and break up play and play simple passes. The problem is that isn't good enough for United. I think that the contrast with Ndidi and Tielemans was an interesting one. Put Ndidi in that United team and things look a lot better, I think. Bissouma is another option. A lot of people think Declan Rice is another option. I'm still to be convinced. Marek asks about where do we go from here. I feel like we've kind of discussed this and maybe we'll talk about it in a second, but on the subject of Declan Rice, did you watch that West Ham Arsenal game?
I did, yeah. What a game.
Unbelievable. I feel like we just kind of have to mention it because it was such a good game of football.
It was one of those games where I feel like there are some games in the Premier League where no, you know, you see a team go two or three goals up and you just know that the game's not over. And there are just some games where you have that feeling, and this was definitely one of them. Even at 3-0, I think it was the way that West Ham didn't start being really authoritative in the game. You know, you just felt that Arsenal could come back. But I mean, what a game. That's just, the Premier League at its absolute best, really.
Yeah, it was so good. But I mean, watching Declan Rice in there,
it's great to see Lingard enjoying his football.
Forget talking about Declan Rice. Jesse Lingard, brilliant. That goal reminded me of the cup final goal.
Yeah, absolutely.
The way his touch kind of lets the ball sit up, and then that beautiful slice strike. You rarely see other players do that, actually. I mean, it's not like it's a regular Lingard thing, but it's I'd say a semi-regular. It's not the only time he's done it in there and the cup finals. He's got that great ability to finish kind of spinning balls that aren't at the perfect height or angle or whatever. We've seen that loads of times. I remember one of his goals against Arsenal for us was one which was kind of almost behind him. I think Rashford teed him up. It was almost behind him, and he just dug out this first time finish into the bottom right, which was great. But yeah, it's brilliant. And him getting an England call up is nice. And hopefully, I mean, he does us another favour and plays ahead of Marcus Rashford would be ideal.
As if England don't already have enough number 10 options now, though.
Yeah, I know. It's such a hard one to choose that squad. Maybe we'll talk about it another time. But Marek's question is basically, should we be giving youngsters a go with the current injuries? I think basically United's injured players are coming back. So no, no on that one. What would you change and suggest to the manager to rescue our season? I don't think our season needs rescuing. I think this is an important one. I mean, in the wake of yesterday's defeat, maybe it might have felt like that, but it really doesn't. We're second. We've got a chance in Europa. This was our first away defeat in England in more than a year. We've barely lost any games this season. And I think that's why these defeats feel rough as well. It's because we've drawn a lot and we've given up. We've conceded a lot of goals and we've given up wins from winning positions. But in terms of actual defeats, this is something we spoke about before. There haven't been that many.
They haven't. I understand the sentiment about rescuing the season. I felt like that after the game yesterday as well. It was such a body blow feeling after the game. It just felt so deflated. Yeah. I think it is important to keep in mind that the season isn't lost for this season. But I think I understand that sentiment though, because we've put so much weight on winning a trophy, both as fans and as a club. You know, like Solskjaer and the players have constantly talked about winning trophies being the goal and the aim of what we want to do at this football club. So I think most fans would probably agree that second and no trophy is still a successful season in the grand scheme of things. But when so much emphasis has been placed on winning a trophy, this kind of result is really disappointing. I think the big thing for me until the end of the season is firstly getting those players back from injury, but also, and we've said this so many times, I want to see some identity in this team.
Yeah.
If we have an identity in the big games, you know, we're a very good side at sitting deep and hitting on the counter attack, and we know what to expect. And I actually love watching that, because even though we end up spending 60, 70 minutes maybe on the edge of our box defending, I know what to expect. I know what's coming. And it's actually it's great to watch. I tune into a game and know what to expect from my team. In almost every other situation, I literally have no idea whether we're going to end up sitting back and letting the opposition completely dictate the game. I have no idea whether we're going to be pressing high up the pitch. I have no idea whether we're going to be reliant purely on Fernandes, whether Rashford's going to be the main man that day. I want to see some more coherence added to our play, and I want to see us start to get more of an identity as a team. That to me is the most important thing that we can achieve going towards the end of the season, that will also then move into next season, and that this team knows where it's going and knows the style of play that it wants to be playing next year.
Yeah, I spoke earlier right at the start of the show about how scrutiny is just even bigger because there hasn't been that trophy, which I think that's second would be a good season. Successful, I don't think so, because I don't think you can have a successful season without winning something as a basic principle. But also, it's so important. But having lost three semi-finals last season, then another this season, to not win a trophy again it would be a problem. United haven't won one since 2017. That is an issue. And I just think it would give just that little bit of leeway for the first 6 months of next season. Otherwise, United and Solskjaer will find themselves in a run of maybe three games where they haven't won a game. They've drawn a couple, lost one, whatever. And suddenly it's, should Solskjaer be sacked again? And that's not healthy for him. It's not healthy for the football club. It's not healthy for the players. So that Europa League win would be enormous, but there's some way to go still. Granada, if we beat them, one of Ajax and Roma, and if we beat them, one of Arsenal, Villarreal, I can't remember the other couple, but yeah, we'll wrap things up.
Prague
there.
And Dino yeah. Zagreb, I think.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I'm hoping the dream way of things going is United beat Granada, beat Roma in the semi, and play Villarreal, who have beaten Arsenal in the semi-final with Unai Emery as manager. That would be fantastic. And the fans can then go and watch United, Villarreal. I mean, United Arsenal final would be great fun if fans could travel. Particularly for me, because most of my mates are Arsenal fans. So I'd get to travel with them there and then split off once we arrived in Gdansk. But we'll see if fans can go anyway. The likelihood is no. But yeah, we'll leave things on that positive note of dreaming of beers in the sun in a European city at a bar and going to see United playing. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. For more from us throughout the week, you can find Jack on Twitter at
UTDTates, T-A-I-T.
And you can find me on Twitter at HarryRobinson64 and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D there. Patrons, thank you for your questions. Thank you for your continued support that allow us to do these things. Non-patrons, if you'd like to get involved and hear this every week, just go to our Twitter at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D. And you can find information there as to how to do that. But until after the international break, we will leave it there. Have a great week. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.